It's March 1st, 2025. And so I've been dealing with some, what seems to be sciatica, an extreme onset. So I have my theme for tonight, which is pain. So it's been very insightful. It's been a blessing. I'm grateful for it. It's not too bad right now. And I don't want it to come back, but still it's been very good. I'm grateful to be able to experience it, and I don't suffer from chronic pain. I have had painful things happen, physically painful things happen, mentally painful things happen, but I don't suffer from chronic pain. I do practice Qigong, and I more or less tend to have a pain-free back, pain-free knees. And so this is within the last 4 weeks, just some pain started coming on in my lower back and left leg area. And it was kind of steadily getting worse, but I wasn't too worried about it. But then 5 days ago, something shifted. It reached ahead. Something gave way. And I lost the ability to walk temporarily. So it's been quite a week. And a bit of a journey. But again, I don't suffer from chronic pain. I really feel for people who do. But this is just would be a sudden onset of very strong acute pain that wasn't really going away. So before I talk about some of my reflections or contemplations around it in the past week, which I think have been quite fruitful, it's, I think, having pain and not being able to run away from it, if we use it correctly, it can be very, very good for practice, and I have found it good for practice. Even just something like being forced to move more slowly, much more slowly, it's been quite a nice experience, actually. But pain is pain. It's unpleasant. It's the pain part of sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. And just a brief summary of 5 days ago, I think it was the evening of the 24th, I stayed down in the cloister area because the pain was getting worse, and I was concerned that maybe I wouldn't be able to walk from my kuti. So I did stay down in this area that night, and also laying down was already getting difficult. If I laid down for more than 4 or 5 hours, it was quite difficult to get up out of bed, and I would have to, even, you know, say a week ago or a week and a half ago, I started having to have some prop or a chair next to my bed to pull myself up. But then once I was up, it was okay, and walking and standing were quite comfortable, and it just didn't seem so problematic. But then early morning of the 25th, of February 25th, so about 5 days ago, then I was just kind of doing my get-up routine as normal, and then I pulled myself up on this chair, and I was about a quarter of the way up, and then some sort of pain floodgate opened from my back down my left leg, and it was extremely intense, and I fell to the ground shaking, and was pretty much in agony for maybe a few minutes, and was surprised. I wasn't expecting it. And the only way I would describe it is like a flood of pure pain. And so I was using some breathing to calm myself down. And then I thought, okay, well, what do I do? And since I was staying in one of the offices down here, I had locked the door. I thought, okay, well, if I need help, I need to get the door unlocked. So then I thought, okay, well, the lock on the door is 10 feet away from me right now, and it just seems so far away. And so then through the next 15 minutes, I did a lot of different little micro adjustments to my posture and slowly got into a crawling position. And I crawled to the door. I reached up and I unlocked the door, turned on the light, okay, what do I do now? It's about 3:30 in the morning. And I thought, okay, well, I need to get up standing somehow. So I grabbed onto the edge of the desk, tried to stand up. Okay, well, that's not happening. The pain started. What I've now termed the maximum pain. The maximum pain started coming. I thought, I don't want that again. So crouch back down, reassess what to do. And then, to make a long story short, over about the next hour, I would lift myself maybe a couple inches and then stop for about a few minutes and then lift myself another few inches and then stop. And that worked. And eventually I got up and I was standing and I was able to stand stooped over. I couldn't stand straight up. That was just impossible. So, then I heard some movement outside. People were coming down to the cloister area. So then, I grabbed onto one of the office chairs and used it as a walker because it became very clear very quickly that there was no way I was going to walk unassisted. So I grabbed onto one of the office chairs and just kind of walked back and forth in the office for a little bit. And that kind of made things get a little bit better. Got some circulation going, went out, went into the monk's bowl washing area. Tan Rakito was in there shaving his head. So I said, I think I need some help. I said, actually, it's kind of funny. The first thing that came to my mind, I said, can you make me a cup of coffee? Thought that would make me feel better. And then, I couldn't sit. I was kind of afraid to sit or do anything other than stand and walk at that point because I didn't think I'd be able to get back up. So I just kept kind of walking back and forth with this office chair. And then after breakfast, thought, yeah, I got to go to the ER. So went to the ER and in Ukiah, and it was, they asked me a bunch of questions. I mean, I went in with Rhoda's walker, which is a really great walker, by the way. And I was using Rhoda's walker, which was just, yeah, I can really see why people like these things. And went to the ER. It was very not busy. Good day to go in. And then they got me in pretty quick. A nurse asked me a bunch of questions. Like, you have sudden loss of your bowels, extreme numbness. Are you nausea? A lot of nausea, vomiting, dizzy? No. Just really extreme pain. Oh, well, okay, that's not a problem. I know if you don't have those other things, we're not so worried about it. So then they gave me a shot of something that was supposed to make the pain go away, which it didn't. And then they gave me some meds, which was also supposed to make the pain go away, but it didn't. And so then they waited for about an hour to see what let them fully kick in. And I just kind of stood. I went between standing and sitting on the Rhoda's walker has a seat on it, so you can sit on it. And I could kind of sit on it somewhat comfortably. And the nurse came back in. How's it going? Well, just okay. It feels like nothing's happening. Then they got a little bit more concerned. Okay, we'll prescribe you some muscle relaxants. I said, is there any way I could get an x-ray or something? And they're like, no, we're not going to do that for you. So then eventually, after a couple hours in the ER, I left the same level of pain that I went in with and made a note to myself that maybe the ER is good for certain things and not good for certain other things. Maybe it's good if you cut your finger off or something, they can patch you up. So it was about mealtime, so Kevin was with me. We had to eat in Ukiah, and we went to eat at the Maple Cafe and sat down. And then our neighbor Ed was sitting next to us, so it was good to see him. And he said he saw me with the walker in the restaurant. He said, it looks like you've been going through some hardships. I said, yeah, I'm just some sort of extreme sciatica. I went to the ER, and he's like, oh, and he fist bumped me. He's like, okay, now we're buddies. So he said, ibuprofen will become your best friend. I had that for years. So we chatted for a bit. And I did find that day I started bonding with all sorts of people who had had the same problem. And he wasn't the first person to fist bump me that day. And we went to get the prescription. There was this prescription of muscle relaxants, and they said, okay, that'll make it go away. That'll help you sleep. And so I was kind of waiting to take some of these because they didn't give them to me in the ER. And then we got them, and I took one right away. We came back to the monastery. I got set up in Sandivihara in our elder's residence, kind of full sick ward, set up with the adjustable bed and everything. And had a pretty rough night, but not like, I was actually scared to lie down because of the whole getting up part. And but actually, even though I did have a rough night, I do have to admit some of the meds did help a little bit, and I took about probably 2,000 milligrams of ibuprofen, and that did help a little bit. Ibuprofen actually was my best friend that night, and getting up was... I almost decided to go back to the ER in the middle of the night, but I did say, okay, well, what's going to happen if I go? Is it just going to be the same thing over again? And then just endured and kind of stood and sat and looked at the bed for a while and finally decided to lie down again at 2 in the morning. And then in the morning, got up. It was much quicker. I got up in 5 minutes rather than an hour and a half. So it was a little bit better. And but then had the opportunity to go to acupuncture. So I was really looking forward to that. That was that evening, the 26th. Yeah, and that was quite an experience, getting the first acupuncture session. And this is where I was really thinking, okay, well, I don't know how long this is going to last. I'm going to have to take this on as just what I'm practicing with. The meds don't really make the pain go away. So just having to be present with it in whatever position brings the pain up, just having to be present with it. And went in for acupuncture, rolled in the walker, and this acupuncturist, he's quite a master. So I had a lot of confidence in what was happening. But I didn't really have high hopes for a quick solution. I mean, in the ER, they're saying, yeah, if it doesn't fade after 2 months, just come back. And so didn't seem very hopeful. So got the acupuncture. It was very interesting, and felt all sorts of sensations, not a lot of pain during the session. But interestingly, when the needles were placed in me, I had a lot of joy come up, even though the pain wasn't alleviated. It's just kind of tears of joy. And the end of the session, the needles were taken out, and I had been very still, lying very still on my back, kind of dull pain, but not too bad. I was pretty comfortable. And he said, well, can you start to move a little bit? And so I tried to get up, and then the maximum pain returned. And I, ooh, okay. And so he was just watching me. There's nothing you could do. And I laid back down, and it wouldn't go away. And it was just there, and there was no movement that could make it go away. There was no getting away from it. So I got to know it a little bit it lasted for maybe 20 to 30 seconds, and then it dissipated, and then it was gone. And okay. So the doctor said, just move just a little bit, do what you did the first morning, just micro adjustments, micro movements. He said, this is a very serious thing you have. It's a very extremely severe blockage that you have. So micro movements. So I kind of took my toes and kind of micro moved my knees up into the air. Pain was kind of coming and going, but not super bad. And then eventually I was able to get up into a sitting position, stopped for about 5 to 10 minutes, slowly get off the bed, get back to the walker. And then I was able to stand up straight. That was the big change right after that first acupuncture session. I could stand up straight. I said, whoa, okay. Still painful, but that's a big change. Still can't walk. He said, yeah, take it slow. You're going to be very, very raw, very fragile for a while. But the treatment will keep working over the next few days. And he just said, come back if there's still pain. So turned out, yeah, yesterday I went back, saw him again, because the pain was definitely still there. But actually, yesterday morning was the first morning I could walk unassisted for maybe 5 or 6 steps. So it's definitely getting better. And yesterday went in, and then I was able to focus on points where the pain was, actually. At first, it was just everywhere, so it was hard to say where it was originating. But yesterday, I was able to say, oh, it's focused at this place and this place and this place. And he said, okay, that's very, very helpful information. And then he also said, well, does pulse diagnosis. So he said, your vitals are extremely strong. Your chi is very, very strong. This is really the only thing wrong with you is this blockage. And we're going to use that vitality, and we're going to try to clear out the rest of this blockage. And what he forgot to mention was, because that vitality is very strong, the pain's going to be strong again, temporarily. So four needles went in the right side to treat the left side. And then through me describing the sensations, then a fifth needle went in, and said, just, okay, lay there for 15 minutes. And then after a few minutes, I would describe it as two comets of pain, one in my lower back and one behind my left knee appeared, and they started slowly going towards each other and becoming bigger. And they were meeting at the main pain point that I had pointed out originally to him. So these two comets were meeting at the main point, and it was getting more and more intense. And I was getting a little bit nervous, actually. Like, I thought, like, it was going to explode or something. And that's okay, this is really intense. It's not maximum pain, but getting close. And these comets were kind of just coming closer and closer together. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen when they met. The energy was just moving in that way. And actually Ajahn Guy was with me. So I said, Ajahn Guy, can you go get Toby? I'm not sure about this. And then he went and got the doctor and then came back in. He's like, oh yeah, I said, sorry, I forgot to warn you about that. That's exactly what's supposed to be happening. And I knew you could handle it, but I should have told you. But then a couple minutes after that, when it did meet, it didn't explode or anything. It just dissipated. It met and then it dissipated, and I was quite comfortable after that. And it was still hard to get up off the table, but it only took a couple minutes, and everything felt very raw, but that was yesterday. And he said, well, it should be... You should be, you know, really on the mend at this point. So today I was able to walk quite a bit today. unassisted. I've graduated from the walker to a cane, and there is still some pain, and I'll get one more acupuncture session on Monday, but definitely I did not expect it to disappear or get this much better this quickly, so better than expected. But still, it's been a bit of a journey, so I just wanted to talk about some of my reflections around pain in general and how it can be very, very helpful, and especially helpful for Dhamma practice. Because especially those times when I had no choice but to be present for some stronger pain, then actually seeing this is very, very unpleasant, and you know, I really want to get away from this. Really want to get away from this feeling. This is Vedana. And yet that desire to get away, in a way, it makes it worse. It compounds the suffering. So I was able to see that and surrender to it pretty early on. Is that acknowledgement that, oh yeah, there's no getting away from this. And that's what we're doing all the time with suffering in general, is we're just trying to escape from it. We're not able to look at it directly. We're not able to go into it. So that type of physical pain can teach us a lot about suffering. And it can also teach us about when we are able to have equanimity with pain, with painful sensations. It can actually teach us the skillful way to relate to pleasant sensations as well, or happiness, because the normal way to react to happiness or to any pleasant feeling, pleasant sensation, is to become intoxicated by it, to become lost in it. It's unusual that we would just be equanimous with it, or just be able to enjoy it and appreciate it for what it is and allow it to pass away without any clinging. That's the norm, is to just become enamored with pleasantness, intoxicated by it. So using pain, if we're able to have a sense of equanimity with pain, then I think what that does is it starts to train the mind in the dhammic way of how to relate to both pain and pleasure, in that we don't need to actually shy away from or go into both of those things. We can actually be mindful of them, and something like pain can sharpen the mindfulness quite a bit. And the other reflection is that, and this is a very subtle point of Dhamma, but it's something I've been thinking about this whole past year, because one of the hallmark teachings of Ajahn Buddhadasa that was very, very controversial during his life was that there tend to be these arguments on the fineries of Dhamma, on the finer points of Dhamma, and particularly dependent origination, paticca samuppada, as to where do you break the cycle. And the generally accepted teaching is that the cycle breaks between feeling and desire, between vedana and tanha, is where you break the desire, because the feeling can arise, but you cannot give rise to the craving. And the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. There's the dukkha, there's the samudaya, the cause, which is tanha, there's the nirodha, the cessation of tanha, and then there's the way, the path leading to the cessation. But then the controversial part comes in when Ajahn Buddhadasa, he was teaching that actually you sever the cycle of dependent origination after contact, between contact and feeling, between pasa and vedana. And of course, you know, different scholars or people who hold different views on this would be up in arms. How can he be teaching that? And you know, it's kind of like the Ajahn Mahabhua controversy. How can he say deathless citta? That's not what the suttas say. He's wrong. So you know, these people can give rise to these kind of controversies and conflicts in the about the finer points of Dhamma. But I think in terms of the contemplation of pain, I would like to really go into that idea of severing the cycle of dependent origination between contact and feeling. Of course, not that I'm able to do this, but taking on as a contemplation, because feeling, vedana, is actually mental. It's not a physical thing. So, say, when I experience pain, that unpleasant vedana is in my mind. It's in the citta. It's It's not in the body. And it's hard to see that. That's very subtle. What's happening in the body is contact. So that's contact. That's sensation. It's sheer sensation. We don't have to label it pleasant or unpleasant. No matter how painful, no matter how pleasant, it's just contact. It's not yet pleasant or unpleasant. It only becomes pleasant or unpleasant when we go into feeling. Feeling is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And then we can think about the teachings of many of the, in the life stories of some of the Kripa Ajahns, Lompur Cha, Lompur Mahabhua, Lompur Man as well. In all of their biographies, they talk about this point that Ajahn Dan as well, he talks about it in his biography, that a pivotal point in their practice was the realization that the Dhamma is the Dhamma and the khandhas are the khandhas, and that these are not connected. But the connection point, see, the connection, so the khandhas, or you could say the body and the mind, the body and the mind are connected through contact. Contact is where the body ends. Feeling is where the mind begins. And you could say that as a way of contemplation. And so with the Dhamma, then there could be a separation, there could be a severance between contact and feeling, if we think of it that way. And it's particularly in Tan Ajahn Dan's biography, I'm trying to remember the way he says it. He says something like, he had this insight that the body is one thing, the mind is another. Or you could say the body and mind is one thing and the objects of mind are another. And it's contact and feeling. Contact is on one side, feeling is on the other. So that's quite a profound way of thinking about it, I think. And it, in a way, it makes it much more interesting to look at feeling and say, oh, I think this is happening in my leg. I think this is happening in my back. This is really painful. This is really unpleasant. And yet this is the mind. It's happening in the mind. And then there's that automatic recoiling from it and so on. And the whole mass of the way we generate suffering. Another way of looking at it is just that it grabs the attention. So just mindfulness, it can really sharpen the mindfulness, hone the mindfulness. And that sense of, if I'm experiencing pain in my leg and I need to move much more slowly, there's a sense of mindfulness of it. But then the mindfulness moves around a bit. So the mindfulness then appreciates the forest a little bit more. There's a sense of pleasantness mixed with those painful sensations. So the mindfulness will notice the garden more, the mindfulness will notice the forest more, the mindfulness notices the sounds of the birds more, the mindfulness notices the movements of the body more. So just being able to slow down and not have any resistance to that slowing down and just go with the speed that the body needs to go at based on the injury. And it's quite a blessing. Actually, even though I can't say I've enjoyed the last week, it's parts of it have been very enjoyable because of that. Yeah. So it's, that's also from the practice. I've been trying to practice mindfulness for a long time. So it's, I could have just become very negative and resentful toward the pain and very angry about it. That could have been a possible way of looking at it, but the mind just didn't go there. I could have panicked when I was experiencing a lot of pain. And maybe that's why in the ER they didn't give me stronger drugs. So I wasn't screaming and panicking. They didn't want to just jab me with a opiate and knock me out or something. But he seems pretty calm. He's probably actually not in that much pain. But it really does hone the mindfulness. It really can give rise to that sense of appreciation of the moment. Another aspect of it is just seeing everybody's well-wishing. That's been very, very moving for me, and people just wishing me well, getting an email from Longpo Pisano saying, oh yeah, yeah, you have to find, because he knows all about chronic pain, and oh yeah, you have to find what works for it, you know, you have to experiment, and he said, oh, I'm going to have the Sangha at Amaravati do chanting for you. It's not a usual experience. Usually we're doing the ones chanting for others. It's not usually we're not on the receiving end of it. And then there was Ajahn Acharlo in India, and there's a lot of our friends and Abhayagiri monks with him. Tan Sampano, Tan Sudako are with him in India right now, along with Anat and a few others. They're all together, and they were dedicating merits, and Ajahn Acharlo was dedicating some of the merits to hoping that my pain gets alleviated. So it's very, very nice to, very moving to receive those well wishes from others. And then just the Sangha here, the monks here, kind of rallying. And it's quite lovely, quite nice to see. If I was in a state of panic, they might not want to do that, though. It might be a little bit more unpleasant for them. Okay, let's just let them go through that. But no, it's very, very nice to connect with people through this, and so it's important that these things happen. There's also just the reflection on having a body and the unsatisfactory nature of it, and this is it's like if we expect for these things to not happen to us at some point in our life, that's a very unrealistic expectation. And it's just for somebody to go through their life and not have any sort of pain arise like this, then that's not realistic at all. Maybe it's happened a few times in the world, but yeah, we're going to have pain. We're going to get sick. And that's one part of letting go of that intoxication with health and just saying, yeah, it's not like we neglect our health, or it's not like we don't deal with injuries or deal with pain. It's going to arise at some point. And also, we don't have to make the pain arise. Some people might think we need to make the pain arise so we can contemplate it. That's also very unnecessary. So we just, like, I would never want to just stab myself in the leg and look at the pain that way. But then if it just happens and it's out of my control, then there's no choice but to look at it. And we can extend that to the other intoxications the Buddha talked about, the intoxications that fell away from his mind that allowed him to leave the home life to the state of homelessness, to the state of the monk, the intoxication with youth, the intoxication with health, the intoxication with life itself. So when he contemplated old age and that he too would grow old and there's nothing that could be done about it, then the intoxication with youth, or that hope for eternal youth, fell away from his mind. He was freed from that particular intoxication. And then when he reflected that no matter what, there would be pain, illness, sickness, people can't escape this, then there's that intoxication with health fades from the mind. There's not that unrealistic expectation that we're just going to be healthy all the time. And then reflecting on death, I too am of the nature to die. This is normal. This is the way things are. Everybody has to experience this at some point or another. Then the intoxication with life itself faded from his mind, fell away. So that intense sobriety, when those three intoxications fall away, and that actually gave him the right mindset to become a monk, to become a samana, to seek the deathless. And that's the response. That's the sober response to the falling away of these three intoxications. And pain is just one part of what we could call sickness. So some people were asking me, is this the worst pain you ever experienced in your life? And I think when there's pain, it's very, one thing that also came up for me in the past few days, that it's very hard to compare pain with other pain. Because it's almost like any pain you're having in the moment is the worst pain in your life, because you don't want it in that moment. It's trying to compare, okay, well, the dislocated shoulder, the centipede bite twice in my neck, the scorpion sting, trying to compare these other types of pain that I've experienced. It's up there. It's probably top three. If I really am honest about it, it might not be the most. It's when it's strong, we don't want it when in the moment. And even when the pain was alleviating, say day before yesterday, it's alleviating. I still don't want it. I don't want the less pain. I don't want any pain. It's like when you're in the maximum pain, oh, I wish it could just be a little bit less. And then it's less. So, oh, I wish I didn't have that either. I don't want any of it. I just want to be totally free of pain. It's good to contemplate and not have that sense of resistance to it. This is what the Buddha talks about in the suttas, giving heed to perceptions of resistance, because those perceptions of resistance that are going to compound the pain, compound the dukkha. And then never to underestimate that when the mind calms down, when the mind can be even a little bit peaceful, because if we see Vedana as a mental phenomenon, whether the unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral part of it, if we see Vedana as a mental phenomenon, when the mind calms down, the Vedana also starts to calm down. Then there's just contact. So it's a reflection worth taking on. I find it very, very profound. So I'm actually not in pain right now, which is nice. This cross-legged posture, it's very nice. When I stand up, there'll be probably a little bit of dull pain, but it's not too bad right now. So we'll see how it goes over the next few days. But it has been nice just to be able to slow down a bit and to happen within the context of the winter retreat and so on. So I wish everybody to be pain-free as much as possible. And if you're not, I hope you can use it skillfully for your practice and leave it there for this evening.